What do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Yeah, Metaball football's on the air.
Kamala Puyol wins it like a titan. He's brilliant, the captain. Rises like a colossus above and hammers this one down with his beautiful curly head.
So if you're looking for the latest and the greatest sport in the world, as well as some hot opinion, interviews, entertainment, all that other good stuff, you come to the right place. Mad About Football.
Listen to my puppy show and don't miss a part. No eating, no drinking, and no peeing their pants.
Is this
pace is going to take Manchester United apart, and I would almost and I'm going to go ahead and predict this. I think Messi gets two goals, and I think the pussy mama Ronaldo is going to have one of his worst games of his life, and Real Madrid's going to go, we don't fucking need that worthless piece of shit. Let me put it to you this way.
It's hard to follow that up right there.
You know, I would rather be wrong with the big score line than do the how everyone's going to go, we're going to pick Man United 1-0, 2-1. It's going to be a tense final. I don't think it's going to be that tense. I think this game is going to be over with before halftime. And the Spanish contingent will get the party started just a wee bit early. Fuck Manchester United. Fuck Manchester United. Fuck Manchester United.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mad About Football. That's right, the edgiest, wildest talk show on the internet, podcast-wise, about the beautiful game of football. George Mattel is here. I got Juan Arango. I got so many people here to discuss this great Champions League final here. We got, the third half, Jonathan Starling, Kevin Walker is going to be joining us. We got Hannah from Forza Football. Juan Cardick, Chris Schneier. We got Juan, Brian Zygo, and, of course, Andres Cordero helping us out. Juan, too many people. I'm getting tired.
I think you should be quiet there. Get a little drink of water, man.
Get my inhaler.
Obviously, thank you very much, all of you for coming in. Tonight it's like, remember Rick James on the Dave Chappelle show? It's a celebration. That kind of thing. George does it a little bit better than I do.
Celebration.
it's like that, man. It's just absolutely incredible today. Let's get every one of yours opinion. Let's start out with the newbies here with Forza Football's diva, Hannah. Give me a little bit about your opinion, Hannah.
My opinion of the game today.
Of course.
Is, well, I support Manchester United. I know that's why you want. We played like crap.
We won't hold that against you.
We seriously played like crap, but at the same time, whenever we did have chances, we were easily taken care of by Barcelona. It's basically all I can say. They shut us down. They did their job. Proved that they're the better team for this season.
Now, Andres, what was your take on it? I agree with pretty much everything Hannah said, but did you see anything different? Where did you see the game today?
Well, first of all, I appreciate you guys for having me on. It's actually been probably a second or third attempt to get me on the show, and finally, here I am.
Yeah.
I was surprised and impressed by how easy Barcelona made it look. Manchester United is a fantastic team. You need to look no further than their last two seasons to see that it really is an elite club. Last season was an historic season for United, and if you look at the numbers this year, the numbers are actually almost better. They've got more points in the play, although scoring was down in part attributed to Cristiano Ronaldo scoring a few less goals than his 42 from last season, which was a ridiculous amount of scoring output. Mm-hmm. But Johan Cruyff said football is simple, but the most difficult thing is to play simple football. And at the risk of sounding cheesy, I think that really embodies the way Barcelona played this game. They made it look a lot easier than it probably was. that slick passing style that they've been so stubbornly offensive for this entire season, and they did absolutely nothing different in this final, missing two starting fullbacks, missing a center back who was injured, with an improv center back in Ture Yaya. And at no point really did they look phased beyond the first 9 minutes of the match. I think that's what really caught me off guard, was how easy Barcelona made it look against what I truly believe is the second best team in the world right now. And many people would have said first before this showdown, before Barcelona so broke Manchester United down, and really was impressive.
What was the big, any of you who want to jump in real quick, what was the big difference in the game? Where did you guys see the big difference? If there was one in particular that really stood out.
I think
difference in terms of what Barcelona had done in previous games, there was no difference. Barcelona faced Manchester United the same way it faced Real Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu, the same way that it faced Chelsea over both legs, the same way that it faced Lyon, the same way that it faced Bayern Munich. I mean, it's taken on some very big, very important teams, top European talent in this tournament, and Pep Guardiola had that same mindset. We're going to go in with the traditional 4-3-3 system put in by his teacher, Cruyff, and it's worked out. What I was impressed by was, I do think football at its root is a game of courage, and my hat goes off. Kudos to Manchester United and Sir Alex Ferguson for playing with so much courage and not parking the bus in front of the goal, not resorting to ultra-defensive tactics, which, if we think back to the semifinals last season at Camp Nou, that's exactly what they did. They played exactly as Chelsea did, knowing that they can resolve the series in the second leg. There was no second leg for this one. So Manchester United, confident in its quality, went forward, and I think that was the big difference, obviously, between how United faced them last year and how United faced them this year. And I think in a duel of offensive talent, I think the more offensive talented team won. I mean, it's no big secret. It really was a very simple match between two teams, and one was outplayed.
Now, Kevin, what were you going to say?
No, I was just looking at the last two games that they played against Chelsea and the limited output offensively. And again, you can mention the style of play by, you know, the course that Chelsea took versus what Manchester tried to do today. But I was surprised, again, based on the quality of Man U, they seemed out of sorts. In that first 10 minutes, there was that bobble on the shot that happened for I think the closest they came was that one shot on goal early on, which was a little bit scary for all Barca fans. And then after that, the game just, the tempo changed. Barca seemed to control everything in the midfield. And if you look at the stats, it was pretty fair. It was pretty even. Possession was pretty even. And it was just a matter of shots on that Barca was, they just seemed to control it from after that first 10 minutes.
Kartik, now, let me get to you real quick. Kartik from MLS Talk and from the Kartik Report. Kartik, what was your take on the game?
I think Manchester United, and I know they've won three domestic titles in a row, but maybe we'll get into this deeper in the show, my opinions of the depth of the English Premier League. But I think since Roy Keane left Manchester United and they lost Nicky Butt, I think of those two guys in their 99 treble season and the comeback against Bayern Munich and the impact those two guys had, and just playing a supporting role, breaking up the Munich attack and also breaking up the attack throughout the Champions League. They don't have those kinds of players now. Owen Hargreaves has been hurt. Michael Carrick, I'm not a big fan of. They didn't have Darren Fletcher today. And you also have a situation where I think since they lost Roy Keane, they've lost some of that leadership in the midfield, that grittiness when things go wrong in games. Manchester United is not a gritty team. They're not a team that's able to say, okay, we're going to fight through this, lads, and we're going to win this thing. And they don't get challenged much in the Premier League. But when they face a good attacking squad like Barcelona, they have a tendency to look kind of listless. They did not look good in the final match against Chelsea. They were outplayed in that match. They were outplayed in the two legs against Barcelona in the semifinals last year. They got the gift of getting to play Arsenal in the semifinals this year. I think there's a leadership issue since Roy Keane left, quite frankly.
I see what you're saying. Now, Brian Zeigel, what about you? What's your take? I mean, I'm trying to get as many different takes, and I see everybody saying, I mean, agreeing upon the same thing. So where do you see this, Brian?
Well, to be honest with you, I've only been able to watch the first half so far. I wasn't able to escape the office to watch the whole
thing.
You
didn't miss out on much.
I think I kind of feel Manchester United probably did go in there with a little bit of an over-arrogance, especially after the way they saw Chelsea kind of shut down Barcelona for the most part of those two games until the very end there. For me, coming out of all this, the big thing is the pleasure of not having to hear what I like to call Anglo snobs, how great the EPL is compared to the rest of the world.
Here, here.
Yeah. Amen to that. Amen to that.
You know, Brian, it's interesting that you used the word arrogant for Man U, because some of the British media that I've been listening to were using that and applying it to Barcelona.
Which is funny, because that's the same media that's saying what they would place, what, fifth or sixth in EPL if they were in the EPL?
Right.
Who's arrogant? Right.
The guy on 5Live 2 weeks ago said after that Chelsea-Barcelona game that Barcelona would finish fifth in the English Premier League, which is just an absolutely absurd statement.
What was his name? Lovejoy, right?
Tim Lovejoy. You should have your credentials revoked for such a statement on the air.
He's no longer working on that program, so that's not a problem.
Actually, yeah, all their presenters are that way. All their presenters on the BBC are that way. It's not just Lovejoy.
There was one guy today that said, you know what, he was excusing Manchester. Hey, they had a bad game. That if Manchester would have played their A game today, they would have beaten Barcelona. I'm like, well, you know, couldas and shouldas, you know. I mean, if couldas and shouldas were pots and pans, the world would be a kitchen. I remember one of my college teachers telling me that.
Let's give Guardiola a little credit here for knowing his squad better than Sir Alex Ferguson knows his squad. I mean, let's give credit.
Well, I don't think it's knowing your squad better. Like, I think that he, you know, his players went out there and performed the job. I don't think it's knowing your squad better, because you can't say that Ferguson doesn't know his squad.
I said Ferguson knows his better.
And what I mean by that is Guardiola had to fill in a lot more holes than Ferguson did, and Guardiola made it work.
Every time that Ferguson's put out his team lately to go and do a job, they've done it, you know? But at the same time, I don't think you can say that he doesn't know his squad.
You gotta listen to the words. I said Guardiola knows Barca's squad better than Alex Ferguson knows his own squad. I'm not saying Alex Ferguson doesn't know his squad. I'm saying that Guardiola knows his squad, his own Barca squad, better than Sir Alex Ferguson knows his own Manchester United squad. And the reason for the holes that he had to fill in, you know, he had to fill in holes that if you thought on paper going into the game, you thought that would be a massive weakness.
It was a massive weakness on paper,
but if you look how it played out, Yaya Toure was brilliant in center defense with Piqué.
You need to look no further than what he did with Sergi Busquets in the midfield. I mean, pushing Yaya Toure back is in terms of liability, in that today Yaya is probably their best destroyer in the midfield, a la Gattuso, a guy who's going to break up the attacking play of the other one. And instead, he inserts Sergi Busquets, who a year ago was playing for Barça Atleti. I mean, a guy who was in the lower divisions of Spain, now he's starting in the Champions League final. I think that's knowing your squad.
But
the
midfield is where this team was born. Keita. They could have inserted Keita over him, you know, at any time. That says a lot about Guardiola.
He's gone with Busquets, which was a guy that he brought in at the beginning of the season. He said, well, you know what, you're a first division player, you're going to play with us. It's no coincidence that the midfield of Barcelona and the midfield of the Spanish national team is the best in the world. And I'll tell you right now, Sergi Busquets might be a part of both at the moment, but it's really Iniesta and Xavi. Xavi took man of the match honors here, and I think something that was mentioned earlier, Manchester United could not match up with that midfield. Xavi and Iniesta, especially Xavi in this game, did whatever they wanted in midfield and really controlled possession where it mattered most.
The back line, Silvinho played. Silvinho had a good game. You know, basically, Silvinho just didn't have to screw up, basically. And he didn't. He had a good game. Puyol played very well. Piqué and Yaya Toure in the middle played very well. And if you consider, like you said, the fullbacks were out. Everybody was concerned about how they were going to fill the holes, and Guardiola filled the holes very well. And that's why I say he knows his squad better than Sir Alex Ferguson knows his squad. Now, I'm not saying Sir Alex doesn't know, I'm just saying this result proved to me, one, clearly Barca's the best team in the world, and two, that Guardiola knows his squad better than any coach can say that they know their own squad.
So George, that's what I got. So George, let me ask
for a guy who's been there 1 year, exactly.
So George, let me ask you a question. Does Guardiola know his squad?
No, but part of this is a style.
That's important. Just think of the holes that he had to fill. I think that's a big.
No, you're right. Yeah. Go ahead, Cardi.
Part of this is, and I kind of agree with George's point, because I think Ferguson hasn't really had to find out about his squad because of the teams they've played. And the one team that they play that can play football in the English Premier League is Liverpool, and they've exposed Manchester United twice this year. They took 6 points off of them and were not really challenged in either match. But the point I want to make is that English clubs traditionally have trouble, and the English national team also, with midfields, with guys like Xavi and Iniesta in them. Small, quick midfielders who can play one-touch football but can also hold the ball and have great vision. If you look traditionally at the teams that have knocked England out of international competitions, Euros and World Cups, or World Cup qualifying, and also English clubs out of the Champions League, it's been teams with midfields like Barcelona's. So when you think about it that way, it should have been logical that Barcelona would win this match. But with the defensive holes, some of us were concerned coming into the match that Manchester United may actually win this.
No.
That's true. And you know what? I really wanted to get back to what Cardick had said previously about Man U missing leadership in their captaincy, let's say. You know, Giggs was really not on the pitch today. He was absent. And Puyol was the exact opposite. And so that midfield of Man U has been lacking this idea, that grittiness, as Cardick pointed out. And they just haven't had it since Roy Keane has left. I totally agree with Cardick on that.
Pretty
point.
Well, since Roy Keane's departure. I mean, let's not belittle Manchester United too much. I know you guys don't mean to belittle Manchester United, but they've done pretty well since Keane hung up the cleats. It's a very good team, but it's not just English teams that these sorts of midfields give trouble to. And that's what I was trying to point out by drawing the parallel to the Spanish national team. This is modern football. This is what is winning championships. It's the reason the Spanish national team are European championships and at the moment have to be considered the favorites to win the World Cup in South Africa 2010. The likes of Xavi and Iniesta, that quick passing, the control, that slickness, looking for the wings, having a guy like a solid nine, like a Samoleto in the center of the pitch, that's what's gotten done with David Villa on the Spanish national team and with Samoleto and Thierry Henry for Barcelona. And the guy at the center of that, which is the point I was making earlier, is Xavi, player of Euro 08, player of the match at the Champions League final. It's not just that this is going to give big physical English teams fits. It's going to do that for everyone.
Everyone.
Now,
definitely.
Now, my question to you guys, who was your man of the match? My man of the match, I mean, God, it's hard for me to not pick Xavi, but you know what? For me, outside of Xavi, I'd have to pick Puyol. Because he had probably the most, one of those legendary Puyol efforts where you see him all over the field back and forth. He had the unenviable task of being left-footed and playing on, as a right back, of having to cover Ronaldo a good chunk of the time, of having to go on the attack and leaving his back. And he did that very well. I think, in my opinion, he was the best player. What was your man of the match, each one of you?
Andres, go first.
Go ahead, Andres.
Not everyone at once. I cannot disagree with you that Carles Puyol definitely deserves Man of the Match honors, especially you look in the 87th, 88th minute of that game, and he is on both extremes, the offensive extreme and the defensive extreme. It's a guy who played as a winger in La Masia, was converted to right back to make his debut for Barcelona, and later on converted to center back. So he's played a couple of positions, and he showed that he has for lack of a better word, Cole Jones, to push forward and play as a winger and try to create. And he's cutting in on Manchester United defenders. So I can't disagree with Carles Puyol being the man of the match. And he was probably Barcelona's most visible man in this game, which when we talk about leadership and whatnot, it definitely accounts for a lot. He was going up against a very, very stout offensive team, although Wayne Rooney seemed to be missing off the pitch altogether today. So it really was Cristiano Ronaldo on an island for long stretches of the game. But I cannot take away from what Xavi does. He really is sort of an unsung hero in a way. I mean, here's a guy who finished fifth in the FIFA Player of the Year award, and I know I'm sounding like the president of the Xavi fan club here today.
You?
But
well, you're
absolutely
there.
Not. No. I'm not. I would actually take Iniesta. If you ask me which is the better player between Xavi or Iniesta, today I would take Iniesta. And matter of fact, as I'm sure you guys have heard this little quip, but when Guardiola was leaving Barcelona, one of his final seasons there, he turns to Xavi after seeing Iniesta at La Masia in practice, and he says, you know what, you're going to retire me, but that guy is going to retire both of us. And Iniesta really is that special. But today, it's Xavi. It's his connective passing and the fact that he plays a little bit more withdrawn than Iniesta does. Iniesta has a little more freedom to go forward. Xavi sort of plays almost in a holding midfield role, but he creates from that spot. He doesn't disrupt from that spot. And I don't think Barcelona's midfield dominates the way it did today, if not for Xavi. Add that to the assist that he puts on Leo Messi's head, which to see Leo Messi head a goal in is an act of God itself, and it wasn't with his hand, which is fantastic. So I think you had
Argentinian jab.
That assist, and he's got to take the man of the match honors for me, Xavi.
Now, Hannah, what about you?
I was going to say Pulio along with you. I completely agree. He was all over the place, and you can go a few minutes without seeing him and just hearing his name being called out. I mean, he was definitely the big man in the backfield, you know, that not playing in his normal position, not playing on, you know, off the wrong foot and everything. And he was just everywhere. I don't think I've ever seen him run that fast either. So,
I'll throw this out to you. The guy, or probably the silent hero of the night, was probably, God, and I'm going to steal a line from Andres, was none other than Pekenbauer. Let's not just say it was Puyol who was a superhuman effort. I mean, you know, Yaya Touré was brilliant. Piqué was absolutely, you know, he was just, you know, a man in that back line, just rejecting everything in the air that was coming in his way. Silvinho played a wonderful game. Valdez, God, you know, people were chanting his name after the game was over. So I think, you know, he's kind of, you know, I mean, not
almost
that he was,
might be vindicated. He's vindicated.
Yeah,
he's
definitely been vindicated. Not that he's been doing bad the past couple of weeks. He just, you know, he's just been Victor Valdez on occasions, you know, like he was at the beginning of this game. But he vindicated himself, especially that one-on-one against Ronaldo. So, I mean, it's a lot of those factors. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt anybody. Zygo, what about you, man? Who was your, based on what you saw, who would you declare like a man of the match or something? Okay. I guess okay. He's not there. Okay, what about you, Kartik?
I'm going to actually say Yaya Touré, because I think he gave the manager the kind of tactical flexibility that a lot of managers don't have. The luxury of being able to move a guy who's probably your best holding midfielder, the guy who can break up plays, especially against an attacking team like Manchester United, move him to central defense because you have that problem because of suspensions and injuries, Rafa Marquez being hurt, other guys being suspended, and then allowing the team to kind of function seamlessly around that. If you don't have that player, you have a problem tactically going forward coming into this match. So I actually give him, just from a tactical perspective, my man of the match.
Excellent. Let's wrap this up. We have about a couple of minutes left. Kevin Walker, what about you? And then we'll have the blogging badass Jonathan Starling.
No, I'm on the Puyol bandwagon, but I do have some personal desire to see Eto'o get the call for that early goal, just because he helped me put a little money in my pocket with that goal. So you know, that made the difference early on in everything that transpired later in the game. So getting that early goal was key, but definitely Puyol.
Jonathan, what about you, man?
I've changed my opinion on this about four different times since this match ended, and I finally settled just on Iniesta. I think him. He just seemed to be all over the midfield, setting up all the passes. I believe he's the one who set up Xavi for that beautiful, beautiful cross to Messi for the goal that put the Champions League final with the outreach. And as I said last week, started the party a little early.
Oh, look at him trying to do that. Oh, he's starting to glow a little bit more. Andres,
yep.
I got a question for you. Did Messi
hold on, man. I got to say mine.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I picked Silvinho only because, I mean, he didn't stand out. He didn't stand out like Puyol or Xavi, but he didn't screw up. He didn't do anything bad. He didn't cost
anything. So if you don't fuck up, then you're all right.
Hey, in a Champions League final, that works for me. Okay. In a Champions League final, when you're not a starter and you're filling in, mm-hmm. you know, and you wind up doing enough, you know, not screwing it up, mm-hmm. and you know, being solid enough where you weren't a liability, mm-hmm. that deserves recognition in my book. So I pick Silvino.
Now, Andres, did Messi head that ball, or did Xavi just put it right on his head?
Off of his head. No, I think you need to take a look at that goal, and it was actually a very impressive header on the part of Messi. Yeah, Messi leans back, a ball that's bending away from him, and he puts the side of his head on it. He actually places that ball into the back of the net. I mean, you might say Xavi ricocheted off of his head. I wouldn't. I was really impressed with the technique in the header. It was a very difficult ball to get for a guy who's really no bigger than a lump on the ground, and he jumps back and he gets to it and he puts his head in perfect position, mm-hmm. and he manages to cross it across the mouth of goal and to the opposite post. I was very, very impressed with Messi. I mean, the nicest header I'd seen Messi score before this was that famous Hand of God incident before then, and then that wasn't really a header, so we can't give him credit for that one. I mean, Messi throughout his entire career, people have been saying he's not a complete player. People who say Cristiano Ronaldo is the better player, they argue that Ronaldo can shoot from distance, that Ronaldo can head the ball, that Ronaldo's very good on set pieces. Well, this season we've seen Messi score from set pieces. We've seen Messi score from range. We saw a shot early in this game, a very nice save from Van der Sar from distance, where Messi was trying to one-up Ronaldo in a way. Anything you could do, I could do better. He shot from distance. Van der Sar makes a great save on that pass. And then later on, we see him score with the header. I think it was a really good header, and I think Messi pretty much, even with a slightly above average, if not average, performance by his standards in this Champions League final, he's pretty much cemented at least the FIFA Player of the Year, if not the Golden Ball as well.
No, Andre.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick about that. I want to ask a question about the FIFA Player of the Year real quick. I mean, I've been lobbying the last couple weeks for Iniesta to win it. I mean,
yeah,
is that
a very good argument?
Yeah,
it's not going to be Ronaldo.
No, it's not going to be hopefully.
Shouldn't have been last year either.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I think Iniesta will definitely. Iniesta will place. I have no doubt that Iniesta will place. The thing with Iniesta is he really was a late bloomer this season. He's played really well throughout the year. It's not as if he had a bad start to the season, but it's only late in the season, I guess, when it's most important, he's really come on. Messi's been doing this since day one, and he scored, I think, in the mid 30s in goals. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but this really is the best season in the career of what many consider the best player in the world. I think Iniesta is probably not very far behind. And the difference between Messi, Iniesta, and Xavi today is not very great. It's not as if there's gulfs between these people, and include Cristiano Ronaldo in that group if you like. I think the thing with Andres Iniesta is it stands out so much because he's done it at the crucial moments. He's done it at the end of the La Liga season. He's done it in the Champions League semifinal when Barcelona looked dead in the water and we looked headed for another all-English Chelsea Man United final. And so those moments really will stick out in people's minds, maybe even in the voters' minds, which is why I think Iniesta will place the same way that Xavi placed this past year. However, I think it's going to be very difficult to take that away from Leo Messi, who's been so consistent, so good throughout the entire year.
Even with the way Spain has been going in the world, what if Messi does poorly in the qualifiers? Because, you know, we have national team games coming up in the calendar. Do you think that'll make a difference, or no? Because Iniesta is huge for Spain,
too. I think you have a very, very good argument for Andres Iniesta. As I said, I think he probably is that motor for both teams. But what he does, Xavi also does for the Spanish national team and for Barcelona. What Messi does really is unique, and Messi can do a little bit of everything. And so I think Xavi and Iniesta probably take maybe some votes away from each other. Maybe the balance, you know, swings back and forth. Messi stands out so well and so often. And I think it's a case also of he probably deserved it last year. Leo Messi was unbelievable last year, but he was overshadowed by Cristiano Ronaldo in phenomenal form. And some still believe Messi maybe deserved that award. Cristiano Ronaldo won it, I think rightly so. So it's another issue of maybe sometimes people get the FIFA Player of the Year honor a little too late, or the Golden Ball, they get it a year after they originally deserved it, just because they have that fresh in their minds, or it's because of the prolonged period of time. But while Iniesta surely deserves it, while Xavi probably deserves it, I think it's got to go to Lionel Messi, who is a very unique player. I think Iniesta and Xavi will probably balance each other off.
Well, Andres,
share the wealth.
You know what? Yep. Thank you very much. I got one more question, Matt. Have you seen Mike roaming around there over on North Beach, South Beach?
He was, actually. I think I got a Facebook message from him just a minute ago. I do want to point out one more thing, by the way, and this is sort of to the Barcelona horn. It's got nothing to do with Mike Lopez, although you've got to see him play on Monday night's indoor. I think I scored a ridiculous goal on him last Monday. You might want to ask him about that. But that aside.
Wait, hold on. Tell us about this.
Yeah, it was not pretty last week. We've been playing indoor on Monday nights, and I don't know, something about his ankle. He was complaining about his ankle the last couple of days. It might be broken. I would have an X-ray done on it, but either way, it was a very nice goal, and I won't post. I won't post too much.
The week before that, he said that his team had gotten beat. His butt was sore. So I don't know.
Well, you know what, with
playing you guys.
He doesn't stop running. That's positive. He's a very physical player for a guy who's about a buck 20 soaking wet. He's out there playing with a lot of heart. The one thing on a serious note I did want to point out, and it's something we haven't touched on, is this is not something that Barcelona has done in one season. This is not, let's not talk as if Pep Guardiola came in, waved the magic wand, and all of a sudden this Barca team has the best players in the world. I mean, you look at the starting lineup for this game: Messi, Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, Puyol, Piqué, Victor Valdez. These are all homegrown talents. This is the product of decades in the making, the Barcelona youth system and sort of the Barcelona way to play football. And I think the performance that we see and the ease with which they won this game, or at least made it look that way, is a testament to the right way to play football and the way that the Spanish national team is playing football, the way that Barcelona is playing football. And it really is something that I think can be sustainable. When you look at the conveyor belt of talent that is on that Barcelona cantera, if you will, the Gaia Sulins and the Muniesas, the guys who are set to debut or have just debuted, this is going to be a sustainable thing for Barcelona. And if they complement it with the right pieces, a la Eto'o, a la Dani Alves, then look out. It has dynasty written all over it. And I know there aren't many of those in especially European soccer, but it absolutely could be.
Hey, Andres, man, thanks for dropping some knowledge around here, man. I really appreciate it. I know you got to run, so I wanted to cut it short. Is there anything anything that you're going to be doing in Miami in the next couple of days? I don't know, writing wise or a regular gig?
Well, I'm on Gold TV News every night, 7 o'clock Eastern Time live. It's me and Pablo Alcina. We have a pretty good production team there, and we put together a nice newscast for you guys, half hour live every day, repeats at 11 o'clock as well. So you can check that out on Gold TV. And if you want to know more about Barcelona, if you want to read up more on Barcelona, I've been doing a favor for some guys down here in Miami. The Peña Barcelonista in Miami have asked me to contribute to their blog, and I've been writing weekly on their site. And definitely I'll write up about this Champions League final on there as well. The site for that is www.miamiblaugrana.org. Aside from that, feel free to send me an email, a.cordero@goldtv.tv. I'm always happy to chat soccer. I'm always happy to talk about La Liga, the Champions League national team, and whenever you guys want me on, just where to find me. I'll be happy to join you.
Hey, man, you know where we stand, man. Yeah, we're your fellow Peña Barcelonista Blaugrana writers as well. So what's up with us? We're always here to represent. So, hey, Andres, it was awesome. Thank you very much. And guys, stay here with me. We're gonna be right back.
Barça, Barça, long night.